No. Did everybody have a good eclipse?
I slept through it.
Yeah. You slept through it? It was over at like 12:30.
That's fine.
Yeah. I slept in pretty late that day.
Yeah, I was at the gym. Sam and I were actually texting because I tried to get you to come with me and you were like, no, I got to go later today. And
yeah,
you were like, isn't it like bad luck to work out during an eclipse?
Yes, you were working out for the eclipse.
I was like, no, man, I'm fucking killing it.
You completely missed it, even though we couldn't see shit here.
Yeah.
I did end up for like that hour it was supposedly happening up here in the Northwest. I was playing a video game, but I had CNN on in the background, just the noise. And it was so funny because like every like 15 minutes, basically, they would cut to like the next town that's getting like the full experience. And it was just people sitting in lawn chairs going like,
like, just people looking up at the sky.
Yeah, people wearing dorky like glasses, stupid glasses, sitting in the dark.
I still miss Donald Trump's solar eclipse experience, where he's got, I think I've brought it up before, but ODD, which is like that obstinate defiance disorder, where whenever someone tells him something, he's like, not to do something, he's like, I'm going to do it. So there's that really funny photo of him looking without glasses directly into the solar eclipse and pointing at it.
Squinting very hard.
It's one of the funniest things that ever happened.
I want to say there's another photo of him with his hand kind of over his brow to kind of like shield it.
It's so funny.
What a dumbass.
Welcome to the Haunted Hotel.
All right, well, welcome back to the Screaming Room, everybody. This is the only podcast about horror movies. We hope you enjoyed our Final Destination series, and now we are back to cover a new release. This is your host, Sam. This is my voice, and I'm here today with my co-hosts, Ralph and Scott.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you guys doing today?
Doing well.
Sleepy.
Yeah, you have been awake since 11:30 p.m.
yesterday. Okay. Yes.
That's pretty bad. See, I warned you not to go to the gym during the solar eclipse.
Maybe that's what it was. Yeah.
You have some sort of vampiric
sleep cycle. Yeah.
Well, good luck.
Yeah. I mean, happy to say I did stay awake during the movie today that we watched. So
you did warn us that we were walking up to the theater basically, or driving up to the theater, and you're like, I'm gonna fall asleep in this movie. 50-50
I said 50-50 shot I fall asleep during this movie.
Well, thankfully the movie was at least engaging enough to keep you awake.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Good Ralph, you're doing good.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
I didn't have as less of the little amount of sleep that Scott did, but I also stayed up a little late and been doing that the past few nights, and it's catching up to me.
Low energy podcast today, everybody. Yeah.
We're gonna need to get a little pick me up here somehow.
Yeah, is there any whiskey?
Maybe.
Yes.
Whiskey? Should we do a little?
We're gonna have a little whiskey.
We're gonna have a little whiskey.
Okay. Do you want to set it up while I finish the intro here?
Yes.
Here, we're gonna. You're the person in the middle, so you're like.
Okay, here, we'll figure it out.
This is the kind of show we run. It's very spontaneous. This is what's fun to listen to.
Yes, yes, please. Open the whiskey.
Okay, perfect. So we just got back from an 11:55 a.m. screening of The First Omen, and we're going to get into that. But before we get too far into it, I kind of teased an announcement last week that I want to follow up on about what we're going to be covering in May, specifically. And I'm very excited to announce that The Screaming Room is officially press accredited for the Seattle International Film Festival this year, which is a first for us.
Woo!
Yeah!
Yay!
It's their 50th anniversary of SIFF, which is actually a pretty amazing organization. They do year-round programming, and they have done some really incredible work with saving theaters here in Seattle.
My favorite theater just down the road.
Yeah.
SIFF the Egyptian.
Yep, yep. Just as they're going out of business or...
Yeah, they'll take over really cool theater spots and kind of just make neighborhood theaters, and they really cater the programming to the neighborhood that they're into, which is really
totally.
Cool.
Yeah.
We, where we live, tend to get some of the hipper midnight type movies, mm-hmm. and then some of the other locations get more of the art house indie vibe.
Yeah,
and
like the Uptown.
The Uptown, yeah.
And then now we have the Downtown SIFF Cinema, which used to be the Cinerama.
Legendary here in Seattle.
Absolutely. And that's where you can go get chocolate popcorn and watch Dune 2.
Yes.
Or Wonka. Anything starring Timothy.
That's where we tried to go see Dune 2 weeks after it released, and it was sold out on a Saturday at like 11 a.m.
Man, that is not a small
movie
theater.
It's not a small theater. Like, not at all. I was shocked. I should have pre-ordered tickets, but good for them, though. I mean,
yeah.
They saved a movie theater that the community really loves.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm so happy. I was so happy years ago when they saved the Egyptian up here. I wish they were able to save the Harvard Exit Theater. But that wasn't in the cards at the time. And I'm only a little bit raw about it because it's like the closest theater to me. It's like 3 blocks away from my house.
Yeah.
So I wish.
It would be very convenient for me personally.
Yeah. I wish they could have gotten the Guild 45. Those Art Deco like twin theaters right next door to each mm-hmm. other. Those were so cool. But
yeah, it was the cute. Guild 45 and the Varsity. No, wait, no, not
that's
the
like
Varsity.
Fremont.
Yeah,
no, Wallingford.
No, that's like
Wallingford. Yeah,
yeah. But yeah, they were gracious enough to accept our press application this year, which was pretty cool. One of the things that they did do, which I think is a little bit, I'll call it funny, is we submitted 3 applications, one for each of us, and they're like, you get 2.
But it works out really well, because my dumbass planned a trip to go to LA the week that SIFF is taking place, so I won't even be here for it, so it makes sense that y'all get the passes, and I'll...
Yeah, we'll figure out some screenings that we can
LA.
All go together to,
yeah.
to see.
Yeah, sure. I think I'll be back for closing week. I'll be back in time for closing weekend for SIFF, so there's something...
Cool.
There's some stuff that I'll be able to see. Once the lineup comes out, I'll pick some good ones that I want to go
to. We're gonna... Ralph and I are gonna go pick up our press accreditations next week. And that'll be the night before they announce the full lineup. So hopefully we'll be able to start planning out our viewings and our episodes. But we're still figuring out what that's going to look like exactly. But we're going to try to kind of do some kind of off the cuff episodes kind of throughout the festival and kind of like kind of quick succession. So you'll hear more about it in the coming weeks. But you're probably during SIFF going to start seeing a whole bunch of episodes come out all at once. It's kind of the idea.
Yeah
And hopefully we can get into the opening night red carpet thing. I'm gonna drag you down there with me, Ralph.
I gotta get a haircut and just trim my beard and...
It should be fun. The theme is gold this year because it's
so
50.
Would we be... No, my question though, now I'm thinking about it, would we be walking down the red carpet, or would we be on the other side to watch the people walk?
No, we would. Pressed. It would be a red carpet experience, basically. So it's kind of like you get your little photo up.
Okay,
you get to walk the red carpet.
It.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We'll do it.
So we'll see. We'll see. I'm going to RSVP for us, or we'll coordinate it after the show. I think we both have to submit one. But we're super excited about the opportunity this year. So if you're one of the SIF people listening, thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Give us more. But this week, we are, like I said, we're on we're out of our Final Destination coverage, and we're back into new releases, and we are here today to talk about the movie that we saw this morning, which is The First Omen, which I believe technically is the sixth
Omen
in the franchise. I know we just saw it, but should we watch that trailer really quick?
Yeah.
All right, let's roll it.
You don't have to be afraid. God has great plans for you. This child is his way.
There's this girl at the orphanage. I think that she really needs someone to look out for her.
Carlita
suffers from a touch of madness.
You must be very careful, Margaret. Bad things will start to happen around her. Evil things.
It's all for you. No, don't. What does any of this have to do with Carlita?
His church has maintained power for thousands of years. Lady will stop at nothing to keep it that way. Control people who no longer believe. You create something to fear. I believe the girl is to be the mother.
Mother of what?
It's the mark of the devil.
It's not real. It's not real. It's not real. It's not real. It's not real.
What's not real?
Who said that?
This is very real.
Hell yeah. The First Omen. Wow. I had quite a time watching this with y'all today in the theaters. And before we get into it, and I say that every episode, before we get too far into the episode, this is going to be a spoilery discussion. And as I say that, I think we haven't agreed on this necessarily yet, but I think we have a consensus that this is worth watching
for sure. Absolutely.
100%. Yes.
So go check out The First Omen. And if you aren't convinced yet, listen to us spoil the rest of the movie from here on forward. Hopefully that convinces you. So first off, nuns are back, baby. We've got this movie in theaters at the same time as Sydney Sweeney's Immaculate movie is in theaters. We had Consecration in theaters just a few months ago.
Yep.
And like, it's one of the two themes that I'm seeing in new releases lately. And the other theme is apes. So Monkey Man is in theaters.
Planet of
the new Planet of the Apes.
Kingdom of the Rise of the Planet of the Apes or whatever the fuck.
And Godzilla and Kong.
Godzilla and Kong. Like,
whatever that one's called.
So this movie with Immaculate is like the ants and Bug's Life.
Yes.
2024.
Yes. Which I'm here for. For me personally, anything Christianity, Catholic related, it hits me, and like the part that actually scares me, because I was raised religious, and boy, I love this shit.
Well, yeah.
I eat it up.
Even the star of the, because it's a puritanical horror film, The Witch, What's his name? Innocent.
Oh yeah. Who's that guy?
Yeah.
That voice. I knew I recognized that voice.
He played the father in The Witch and a father.
The deepest voice in.
His voice is amazing.
It's wonderful. He could scratch my back with his voice.
Yes.
It's such a good. Yeah, this cast is great.
How does it even happen? How do you have a voice that deep? I hate myself.
You have to smoke.
I wish.
You have to smoke so many cigarettes, Scott.
You probably.
I've smoked for like 15 years.
Hard alcohol.
More. Harder. More. Faster. Smoke.
Fine. I'll be back in 10 minutes. I'm going to go smoke two cigarettes.
Two cigarettes at the same time.
Yes.
Because they're
two American spirits.
American spirits. Yeah. Yeah.
I also love the nunsploitation and the blasphemous kind of horror movies that we get, because it's fun to see a lot of these sort of tales and, you know, biblical stories or myths or whatever kind of put into literal context in front of you sometimes. And it's good stuff.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to do something here really quick just to get it out of the way. I am going to read the plot summary this time because I'm
jealous.
No,
you're
of you
holding
both.
It on your phone.
I know.
I don't want to have to hold this someone morning. Else's phone. And
you're,
read it.
Yeah, you're getting the official plot synopsis where we have to read the ones that are written by other people.
Yeah. So this is not attributed to anyone on IMDb. So Claudio Carvalho, please come back. Rebecca Swain, we miss you. But here's the summary on IMDb. A young American woman is sent to Rome to begin life. I fucked it up. A young American woman is sent to Rome to begin a life of service to the church, but encounters a darkness that causes her to question her faith and uncovers a terrifying conspiracy that hopes to bring about the birth of evil incarnate. One sentence plot summary there.
Great.
That was a doozy of a sentence.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in that sentence. This film is also... is pretty fascinating because it's a debut feature for the director Arkasha Stevenson, and she directed the shit out of this
strong
motherfucker.
Yeah. Strong.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very. Oh, just. Very
I can't
dynamic
wait to see.
And exciting.
Yeah, can't wait to see more from her. Like, this
oh, absolutely.
Is, she's obviously going to get more work after this, and I cannot wait to see what it is.
Yeah, I mm-hmm. think it's pretty clear that she's a very. Talented filmmaker. Like my only this isn't even a problem with the movie, but like the plot is like almost, and this is like the meanest thing I think I could say about this movie, the plot is a little bit thin in like the first half to two-thirds of it, and it's a little shaggy and maybe directionless. I don't think directionless is like really fair to say, but you're trying to kind of like get your footing in what this story is, because
it meanders a little.
It a little bit. It's like very much a fish out of water perspective.
Yeah.
From what's her name? Marguerite. Marguerite. Well, the mm-hmm. Italians call her
yeah.
Marguerite. played by Nell Tiger Free. So you're kind of in her perspective, and she's like, you know, in a culture she doesn't know, and she's learning the hierarchies of her position as a novitiate, and the movie tells you it's very scary, like up front, and that scary stuff is going to happen, even though it's mostly just kind of like normal nun stuff is going on like a lot of the time, which is scary enough.
Well, here's the thing, I actually thought about this while we were watching it. This movie up until a certain point, the nuns are actually really joyful and happy.
I liked that they had that in there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of scenes of them, you know, communally sitting around a table, peeling potatoes and
smoking cigarettes. So many cigarettes.
Playing with the children in the orphanage, jumping on a trampoline, mm-hmm. smoking a cigarette.
Yeah.
Smoking a cigarette on a trampoline, smoking a cigarette with the children.
Yes.
They're all, it's like, it's really good at showing something that you wouldn't expect from a, like, nunsploitation type of movie, where you show them for a really long time being very joyful and happy and, you know, enjoying each other's company in a way that is just not normal in one of these movies.
I think it's really easy, especially in the genre of horror, to like depict nuns as like scary, totalitarian, haunted, you know, shit like this. And I don't like that all the time. Like, I mean, The Nun too. Like, if I'm going for like a straight up ghost story, I'm like, sure, whatever.
Right.
Give it to me. But like, if you're actually trying to like depict a story that involves like Catholic faith and like the church itself and like why individuals get involved with it, like, I appreciate a little bit more nuance to like, at least not just, at least in the way they don't depict like a nun's experience as like totally joyless, like buzzkills.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone who's like, gonna just whip the ruler out and slap
exactly,
you on the
that,
wrist.
That classic
and just
image.
Just so stoic and stone cold and like no room for any human sort of emotion or experience. And it's like, no, yeah. these are like, there's some that are kind of like the nuns and Sound of Music, you know.
Sure. And like, the Catholic Church is so fucked up.
Fucked up. Fucked up.
Say that right now. Like, I have no shortage of Catholic friends in my life. And like, it's so like, this movie does a good job of at least introducing the idea of an individual experience with your religion compared to the institutional experience of administering that religion, basically. And that's what ultimately turns out to be the real villain of this movie, just as much as the Antichrist.
Yeah.
Overall.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. The movie is, I mean, if you don't know, it's a prequel to The Omen. So you're seeing what happens pretty much right before the original 76 question mark
1976.
Yeah, before the original Omen starts. Yeah. And I think we can get into it later as we go through the film, but like, it definitely, the Antichrist is not the villain, not the antagonist in this film.
Yeah, it's
at
not
all.
The bigger, it's sort of the smaller kind of bad of this movie. It's the, when you have to pull it back and look at it at the big picture, and what's actually sort of orchestrating this is the church itself. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the original series, it's not the original series, the series as it exists so far, really quick here, because during lockdown we were doing our normal cadence of watching horror movies every week and like having a discussion group about them. And we ended up going through the entire Omen franchise, so four films and the 2006 remake with Liev Schreiber and Julia Stiles, right?
Okay. Yeah. Oh my god, I do not remember doing this.
I don't remember the Julia Stiles one.
It's actually fun.
I mean, I've seen the original.
Let me pull up my letterbox. Let's see how I felt about it.
I remember going through this fucking, there's a lot and during the pandemic that I just do not, during the lockdown that I do not remember. God damn it. I'll have to watch that one again because,
It's kind of fun. Like it's fun to see. It's not a great movie.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people were like a little bit too derisive about it.
Okay.
Like, it's easy to say it's like garbage because you're remaking a classic film in the genre. So it's a tall order. But I mean, I had to look at my Letterboxd as well. Scott's pulling his up.
I
gave it a 3.
I'm scared to, I'll have to look at mine later.
I obviously thought it was okay.
I'm scared to see if I've rated it. I may not have even logged it.
Yeah, but as I remember it, I totally, when I was looking up this franchise before we went to see this, I totally forgot there was a fourth one. Because I remember
that's right.
The first one is excellent. Uh-huh. The second one I didn't like as much. The third one I thought was fascinating, and that's the one that people like to compare to Donald Trump a lot. Where it's like, this is the story of Donald Trump's rise to power because it's about Damien.
That's
president.
Right. Oh wait, this is kind of coming back to me a little
and
bit.
Yep. That's the one that has. And forgive me if I'm misremembering this. This is how my brain has categorized the plot of the Omen 3. At the end of the film, basically, Jesus Christ descends from heaven and smites Damien and the movie is over?
Yes. That's okay. that's my memory of it as well.
Wow.
Which I was like, wow, that was easy.
Yeah. We could have been done after the first one.
There's no divine intervention in the horror genre at all. Like, we talked about this a little bit with, like, Final Destination as well. It's like, mm-hmm. it's so, like, tantalizing for the genre to, like, depict, like, the devil or, like, acolytes of Satan or whatever, Hellspawn. But
yeah.
there's just no divine intervention.
Yeah, no guardian angels. Yeah.
Yeah, almost ever. And even, like, in something like Constantine, even when you do see an angel, they're like fucked up and evil.
I mean, yeah, I guess that's sort of what the story of them is, that they're probably going to be so incomprehensible and ugly when they appear to a human that
right, like a wheel within a wheel with a thousand eyes and yeah. flaming wings or whatever. Yeah. I guess Satan's a fallen angel as well. So
right, yeah. yeah.
Is that I guess it makes sense. Never mind. I take all this back.
Whatever.
I'm Catholic now.
I'm Catholic again.
I've never been Catholic. As close as I've come.
I was baptized and I did First Communion.
Oh, really?
Whoa, yeah. didn't know that.
Uh-huh.
I didn't believe any of it
unless I was doing it. I mean, well, I don't remember being baptized, but anyway.
Religion's never... So, I will say this now. Religion's never been a big part of my life.
Yeah.
But I respect people who have that as part of their life.
For sure.
I'm not annoying... atheist guy.
No.
I'm an annoying different kind of guy. So if I'm talking about this movie in a way that seems disrespectful to Catholicism, I mean it. Shut up. Yeah. Write us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Tell me where I fucked
Tell
up.
Tell me your sins.
Confess.
Confess.
So this story... So wait, let's kind of wrap this up a little bit. The Omen franchise overall before this is it has some lows in it, but my relationship with it is like it's pretty good. Like the start of it is really strong.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and it's easy to like draw comparisons, I think, between like the Omen and like the Exorcist, which have very fun relationships with Catholicism, let's mm-hmm. say. They get a little yeah. bit splashy with it. The Omen franchise overall doesn't quite have the highs as The Exorcist, but The Exorcist, I think, has probably the lowest point between the two of them.
100%.
With The Heretic and then the fourth and fifth ones, The Beginning... and the other one that are exactly the same script and are both dog shit.
Oh, God.
Do you remember this?
No, I don't think I've...
It's maybe the I've same movie that. Twice. They oh, God. They came out like 5 years apart or something yeah. like this. Maybe we should do that for our next series.
Oh, please don't.
I'm down.
Yeah, let's do it. We get a really great Brad Dourif performance in part three.
Yep, that's right.
Mm-hmm. I liked that the first Omen kind of threw back to this almost slower paced kind of like 70s and early 80s style, like investigative, like religious drama almost.
Mm-hmm.
Like it probably has like minute for minute, like more like shocking moments in it than the original Omen. Does did you guys have that same kind of feeling? Am I hitting on something that you agree with or disagree with?
Yeah, it's just different. It's a 2024 version of a 70s horror. So like I feel like for me the Omen, the original Omen, is more atmosphere than actual, you know, jump scares and graphic death scenes. There are a couple iconic ones in it, but
absolutely
it didn't lean as far into that, and this one was not very atmospheric to me. It leaned into the jump scares a little bit more than I would have wanted.
Oh, interesting. I thought the jump scares that were in it felt like studio requirements, basically.
Oh, for sure.
And they were very, like, subdued compared to, like, a Blumhouse film.
Yeah.
Or, like, a James Wan movie.
They did still have, a decent amount of them had that music cue with it, which was a little annoying. Mostly because it was so fucking loud, too. It was just like, whoa! But, yeah, like, there was some decent things that they were doing with those jump scares. It wasn't just these, you know, random thing falling or a door opening or someone. I mean, there were a couple of good ones where it was a fake out, but there was something else that was kind of eerie happening, like seeing an arm appear and stroking the back of this, the young girl, and then our main character, someone, one of the nuns, like grabbing her shoulder very kind of aggressively.
That was
behind.
The one
like,
I was thinking of.
It's
when
a
you
pretty good one, but it like it definitely also had that music like sting right at it, where it's like, ugh!
Yeah, and that moment in particular where we see our novitiate lead character Margaret, she's kind of walking through a museum with this young girl who's very troubled in the school.
Orphanage.
I was like, wait a minute. She's always standing in front of a chalkboard, basically.
Yeah. So I mean,
like,
she's, yeah, there's teaching happening to these children.
And there's that very creepy moment where you see the nun who had just lit herself on fire and hanged herself.
They sure did one up the iconic.
The
icon.
She's
from all for you.
It's all for you.
She even says that and lights herself on fire and hangs herself.
But it's a creepy enough moment. When she has that kind of vision of this young girl being haunted by this nun that just killed herself, that it didn't necessarily need the jump scare that comes right after it.
Yeah.
But I even though they were emphasizing it with like the music, I don't feel like it was as egregious as a lot of other things
for
most
sure
of the time, even though we do get a few of those. That's
there's
that's
some egregious ones, but and they're all great. They're fun.
They're fun.
I could have done without them. That's the only thing that I kind of feel like the one where the clothes hanging on the wall turns into a nun and like the people standing in the corners
that,
in the dark.
That
it's
felt
like
that's a James Wan thing.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I will say it was a little bit better than what I had seen of, I think it's the first nun. I don't think I could get through the nun too because it was just too dark. Like the not thematically
visually
you couldn't fucking see what was happening on the screen, so I turned it off. But the first one, there's like kind of that sort of thing where they are looking at the painting of the nun. There's some good stuff that happens in The Conjuring. They try and do that again, I think, in The Nun.
That scare is genuinely really fun.
No, that one's... So it was... I was like, okay, there's a little bit better use of... Because, I mean, like, when she put her... She hangs her habit up on the wall, and it's like, it looks... I'm like, oh, somebody's... That's going to turn into a figure. Like, you just...
Yeah.
There's some fun, like, lead-ups to these things.
Too.
Like, the opening kill... They show the fucking stained glass window being hoisted above this, you know, what is that called? Scaffolding. And of course we know that, like, the church. And there's a character that ends up, you know, stepping underneath it as it's, like, shattering and falling.
Played by Charles Dance.
Yes.
Yeah. That's another callback to the original Omen.
Yeah, exactly.
Lots of callbacks and Easter eggs and lots of influences in this
movie. Oh, so many.
Yeah,
so many.
I could talk about that for a while, too.
Yeah.
Well, we have... Well, until this memory card runs out.
No.
Whatever you want. I feel like the tone overall of this movie... we've been talking about it kind of being an updated, like, 70s, early 80s film, like... for 2024, I thought the pace of this film overall was like a really nice throwback. Like, it's a lot more patient overall. And I just wanted to talk about our theater experience together for a little bit here. because we got tickets for an 11:55 a.m. screening. And when we bought our tickets, there were no other seats reserved in the theater. And then we sit down, and this couple comes in and sits directly behind us.
Directly behind us.
Empty. empty
theater.
They bought tickets. They're like, oh, these people must know something. We're going to get the tickets right behind them. but how long do you guys think that couple made it into this movie before they walked out? And why do you think they left? I was very confused by this.
I want to say they were probably in there for like 30 minutes because they came in. I do remember being aware of them while there were still like advertisements. I think even before the trailers started.
I think they watched more ads.
Yeah,
than they watched the movie.
Because then, yeah, they suddenly just kind of got up and... One of them got up and left and came out, and then they both left. And Scott, you said you saw the...
Well, yeah, when they got up and left, one of them had taken their shoes off and was carrying their shoes.
Taking your shoes off in a movie theater is psychotic.
It's unhinged behavior.
In a public place, honestly.
In a movie theater, notoriously like dogged on for having sticky, disgusting floors. Yeah. And you're raw dogging it with your
clean
socks.
Thankfully, probably because yes. It was early in the morning.
Regal and we were the
first. Yeah. First ones in there.
They're all doing great work.
I wasn't going to name drop the theater, but.
But also.
No one's out there is going to find us.
Those two people listened to our podcast that were sitting right behind us. That's why they left.
That's why they left.
Realized who we were. They were like, oh my God, we can't do this.
So, oh, well, we can just go listen to the podcast afterward.
So they left.
We don't need
She's
to watch
got
it.
Her shoes yeah, exactly. in tow. And they're gone for like 5 minutes, and we start talking loudly again.
We're like thank God, we can finally.
We're free.
Welcome to my theater.
And then they come back in, and we're like, okay. And then they walk right back out again. Like they probably were making sure they didn't have any of their stuff still there.
She was making sure she didn't leave behind like
another
a third
pair of
shoe.
Shoes, more shoes. Yeah, I don't know. They weren't into it. They were too bored by it, or they wanted to sneak into something else, or I don't know.
Well, that's kind of what I was wondering too, because I could see a lot of people buying a ticket to this movie and thinking it's going to be like The Nun 2 or Immaculate, and kind of seeing this relatively slow burn of a horror movie and just not wanting anything to do with it.
Yeah.
It was also shot very similarly to a 70s film.
Absolutely.
It was gorgeous.
A lot of, I was like, pleased with that. Like,
pans and zooms in
it. Yeah, exactly.
Like, you get one right away, like in the first shot of the movie where you like pan up to the scaffolding and you zoom in and it's like, oh, that is a 70s.
It feels like 70s.
Cinematographic choice. Oh, I made it all the way through there.
I could see how somebody who was maybe wanting a shiny Blumhouse or something like that would see those first 20 minutes of the movie and be like, okay, this isn't for me. Maybe I need to leave. That's partly why. I don't know.
Yeah,
I loved it. I was gobble gobble.
Yeah, you were having a great time.
I clapped at one point during that movie. I was
Which
having
part
a great time.
Did you clap at?
When the nun lit herself on fire and hanged herself.
Yeah, oh yeah, I remember that.
Setup.
I said, yes.
I was like, I know it's coming because they've got the kids all in the courtyard playing, and they're doing that like almost not ring around the rosy, but sort of like that where there's like a couple of circles of girls kind of doing or kids doing. Laps around Carlita, and then they all collapse, and I'm like, oh god, this is great, because they're all now on the ground looking directly up at the like third or fourth story where this nun is, and she's wet,
so,
and it's
well
like
edited.
You're in something flammable. It's great.
Well, how did we feel about something that really stood out to me in this movie is how feminine it is overall? Like, I kept pulling that word up in my head and trying to like parse out exactly what I was feeling as I was watching the movie, because certainly there are a lot of feminist ideas in this about bodily autonomy, let's say, and patriarchy and hierarchical structures that are about controlling women, even if they're often run by women. Were you both picking up on similar themes in this? I'm guessing yes.
Yeah, I mean, the cast is a lot of women, and you're following most of the main characters, and the people that we kind of get the most depth to are women or girls, and we have like, you know, a handful of the men that are important to the story kind of on the outliers of it, and they make their way in when they need to. But yeah, I mean, it's, there's, like you said, there's so much about the, just having the control over your body, and even this sort of exploration of religion. I can't remember what exactly is being discussed, but Carlita is sitting with Marguerite, and Marguerite like tells her to like question things, or like ask things, or like have that exploratory, curious mind. And I think that's really cool to see within that sort of religious structure that can be extremely oppressive and sort of encouraging of like, hey, just do as you're told. Don't ask, don't question the Lord, don't question God. And I think that's a huge part of being a spiritual and religious person, is you have to question that. And like seeing that too also be discussed between two women, it's like, or two girls, it's very, very potent in it. But it's not too like, this is what it's about. Like, it's about femininity and womanhood.
Exactly.
It's a huge part of it, but it's within this deeper power structure thing that they're examining.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything you just said. And like, that's where I think that kind of helps me shore up why I was drawing a distinction between like feminine and feminist, like in terms of the film. Like, it's from the perspective of cisgender women, of course, and like birth is a huge component to like the core themes of this movie. And I thought the way that they approached that was really fascinating, especially since we're like, you know, in the US, we're like on the back end of like Roe v. Wade being overturned, and we have that, is it fucking Alabama, is this your home state that did this, that like just revitalized a Civil War era abortion ban law?
Saw that last week. One of those in the
I don't fucks with Midwest. That place no more. So no, I have no idea. I have no idea what goes on there. I
can't even remember which. Yeah. But I thought, I just thought that was like a really nice contrast to most horror movies. Like, even though like the men in this movie are either like villainous priests, or they're kind of, there's like that one helpful priest that has almost no lines in this movie. Mm-hmm. And then there's Ralph Ineson's character, who kind of is keeping this investigation alive into this conspiracy that the church is running. Like, they're secondary characters. Like, it's mm-hmm. it's not their experiences that we're supposed to be relating to.
Yeah. That was the thing that struck me during this movie. I thought a couple times throughout, I was like, wow, this is like a movie really driven by the female players on the screen and the characters that we've got. And these men are truly disposable.
But also like, every one of them is sort of complicit in like what's happening, because they're all connected to the church somehow, and they're all part of this system. And like you said, what's his character's name? Ralph Ineson?
Father Brennan.
Father Brennan. He's trying to put a stop to this, because he knows this huge conspiracy of what's happening, of like the age of people in the 70s sort of really questioning.
Yeah, well, let's say what the core conspiracy is here. Is this, the plot of this movie is about secularism as a threat to the church's power. Like, mm-hmm. that is explicitly stated in the movie. And this was such a great extension of the universe of The Omen here, because they state explicitly as well that there's two churches.
Mm-hmm.
There's the church that like believers follow that, you know, out of their own faith.
Yeah.
And then there's this deep state church, like literally like a deep state thing. And what they're trying to do is combat secularism by literally birthing the Antichrist. It just a little bit. Well, in order to birth him and control him, but in order to like spread his power and create a threat that would bring people back into the church.
Yeah, they're creating a boogeyman. They're making a villain so that people have the church as the good guys to root for and pray with and commune with or whatever to defeat it.
Mm-hmm. It's the, I don't want to do too much politics here, but this is exactly Hillary Clinton's Pied Piper strategy with pumping up Trump as her main opponent in 2016 that came around to bite her in the ass. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And over the course of 4 more movies in The Omen. The devil's doing great. Damien's doing great.
He's doing great. Flourishing.
Yeah. Until Jesus Christ comes down and squashes him, basically. Yeah. I guess that would be Joe Biden in this analogy. No, I have to stop.
That's
so so yeah, so they're trying to birth the Antichrist and they somehow have access to a jackal.
What? Okay, I this.
So they do retcon the first one a little bit.
This right? drove me crazy. Well, yeah, Father Brennan is in the first one. He's the one that actually gets in the original Omen. Father Brennan is the one that gets the lightning rod that goes through him.
Yeah,
through his body.
Yeah.
That's right.
So he is actually in. He might be one of the only people.
I think he's the only character
besides
over, that carries over.
The baby.
Beside Damien.
Well, Damien.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What was I saying?
The fuck, what were we just
I didn't
about?
Take my ADHD meds. Oh my God. I don't remember what I... oh, the fucking jackal shit.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
They, so this about. Cult within the church is like using a beast of some kind to impregnate women and potentially trying to birth Damien. And where the fuck did they get this like hellhound shit? Well, I didn't need that at all. Like,
there's a weird image of the hellhound near the end of the film that I was a little bit confused by.
Right. Yeah. I was like, honest. Is this something that she's seeing, that she is manifesting this creature that she's told is what's happening? Or
that's right. Likely.
Like, it's more kind of like the Rosemary's Baby thing, where it's probably
there's a lot of Rosemary's Baby in this movie.
Her husband, or just some dude in the church that's raping her and impregnating her with the demon seed. But the other thing, though, is that so Carlita,
the young girl.
So we learn that she's the one that's being impregnated multiple times to try and get a son,
since like the age of like 10.
Yeah,
it's really
it's nasty.
It's really gross.
And so all of these previous babies that she's gotten impregnated with are girls, and they are also
they're deformed
and they die almost instantly.
I don't think that's right.
Yeah, that's what happened.
No, the mother nun is the one that's been having all the babies.
What?
Carlita and Margaret are her child. She says, "I'm your mother, I'm here to help you," when she has the baby Damien. She's the one who's been having the female Omen babies, the female Damians, and then they're impregnating those babies. It's a generational thing.
But Carlita, I mean, maybe that was the case, and but I think Carlita is now the vessel, because she has been having those visions or these ideas that she's being attacked.
Wasn't she the last file, though?
She had all of those
she
files.
Was
they were
number
all...
15, though. She was file 15, and Margaret was file 5. So they stopped after Carlita.
I'm not going to lie, I was a little bit confused.
We need to do a rewatch on this.
Let's buy
tickets. We'll see y'all in a couple hours.
I don't doubt that that
Everyone
one nun...
Everyone, pick up your microphone. We're getting in the car.
I don't doubt that that one nun was the sort of vessel at one point, but I'm pretty sure Carlita was the next vessel at the very least, and they had been
impregnating
her.
Well, they were both Carlita and Margaret were vessels for the Antichrist, and there's also like an incest thing that is a requirement of bringing about the birth of the Antichrist.
Yeah, well, because I mean, they're doing it with all of these
people
one
of the
who have the mark of the beast on them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then, yeah, what we learn is that Marguerite is actually the sister of Carlita,
right?
And she also has the mark of the beast, and then she is then going to be tried to birth the son of the Antichrist.
They're all just trying to have male.
Yeah, they're trying to get a boy.
Technically, they are daughters of the Antichrist, or Daughters of the Devil, but I guess you have to be a male to be the Antichrist. So they're just, the movie, the cult is just trying to impregnate women and make a male Antichrist.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and people die in between. Let's talk about some deaths.
Well, let's talk about some births, actually. Ugh. First. This movie was almost rated NC-17. And the director, I'm going to look up her name here real quick, Arkasha Stevenson. She was pretty adamant about making like birth a core component of like the themes in the story in this movie. So we have in this film two wild birthing sequences. The first one, I believe, is the one that the MPA was like, NC-17, you can't show this, mm-hmm. like in an R-rated movie. And from the articles and the interviews I've read, Arkasha had her producers like backing her. They're like, no, like, we fully stand by your decision to do this, even as the MPA is saying you have to cut this out. Mm. From what I understand, there were minimal cuts. And I think in the first birthing scene, we get a few shots of like people kind of standing in front of the stirrups, yeah, a little with, bit more, yeah, than was probably in the original edit, yeah. is my guess.
Yeah, I can kind of see some moments where it would kind of give us almost a glimpse of what was coming out of her. Yep. And yeah, it would pull away real quick, or it would cut, and I was like, okay, this is probably where they were cutting back, yeah, a little bit.
I mean, it looks like a full front, they filmed a full frontal birthing scene. Yeah. Like, that's, yeah, what it looked like.
Labia majora, labia, yeah, minora.
Yeah.
All of it.
Blood, guts, like poop and pee, like everything's out. Uh-huh.
Like, I when I first saw this movie, so I did go see this by myself last weekend, and I was like, oh, okay, mm-hmm, this is what they're doing. There were only two other people in the theater, and I heard someone like a few rows in front of me go, oh my god.
I we all kind of like cringed, yeah, and got a little squirmy in our seats. Yeah. I noticed wild. That
it's, yeah, because it's not a fetus that we see coming out of her.
No, what eventually we see
demonic,
this slimy
hand.
Ugh, yeah, hand,
arm come out.
Yeah,
like, it's it did remind me of how like Eyes Wide Shut, like during the orgy scene, like the MPA was also like, no, you can't do this. You
can't.
So like
show people actually Kubrick just blowing
pulled, put
people.
A bunch of like black robed figures in front of fucking like in post. That's kind of what it looked like in this case, but they're wearing, yeah, like white, like, you know,
yeah,
OR whatever. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's such a fascinating and graphic sequence. I don't know if it's fair to, I mean it's graphic because it's very phantasmagorical, not, mm-hmm, like birth itself is necessarily a graphic thing, but it is explicit.
I mean, this was a very explicit scene that a lot of us obviously have never seen on film before.
Yeah, and I would say shocking. That's the easier one to watch of the two birthing sequences, because I did appreciate that, like, near the climax of the film, like, we are confronted with another birthing sequence that involves a really hard to watch C-section.
Yeah, we get the first one we were talking about is more of the natural birth, and then we yes. get the other variation of
supernatural
birth, the cutting you open and taking it out.
What does it say about me that I'm like, oh, the natural Whatever. One was the one that fucked me up? The C-section, I was just like, oh, okay.
That C-section sequence was like really rough for me. Like,
oh.
Mm. It was pretty gross.
It was gross for sure, but ooh, that natural one got me worse.
I think either
worse.
One would be unpleasant.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
So where are we at?
Births now deaths. Let's talk deaths.
Can I take a pee break on that?
Note? Yeah.
Cesarean sure. sections. And
I mean, yeah, let's pause it. I'll also take a pee break.
BRB. All right, and we're back from our restroom break. Let's talk some deaths in this movie. Like, we usually go kind of beat by beat through a lot of the movies we talk about, but this one we just saw in theaters, so...
There's only a couple. I think we could go beat by beat.
Mm-hmm. All right, what's the first one?
The first one's
Charles
that...
Charles Dance.
Yes.
Yeah, the opening, yeah.
Yeah, we already kind of talked about that one. We're...
Split open head wound.
Yeah, it's an homage to the original with the lightning rod and through a happenstance.
A little bit of an omen in and of itself.
Yeah, because Father Brennan is the one that he's talking to who eventually gets the lightning rod.
I was going to say, because the wound looks like a yoni.
It sure did. It sure
it's
fucking
very
did.
Yonic.
Do you want to describe
There's so
the wound?
So much yonic imagery in this movie.
It looks like the entrance to a pussy. Labia spread open. Nice.
Where?
Slit in the back of his head.
Yeah. What happened? Yeah.
It's a slit.
Yes, I can. I have one.
It's gash.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the metal pipe from the up on the scaffolding falls, and you, from our vantage point, it seems like he's fine. He says, I'm okay.
Pretty good opening sequence.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he turns around to walk away, and the back of his head just has been sliced open.
It looks splayed open.
Yeah.
Just laid out.
Get my tongue in there.
Oh, my God.
Sorry.
This is our worst episode.
Oh, Father, forgive me.
And then, there really are not that many
it's
deaths.
The nun next, I think.
The nun that immolates herself and hangs herself. Mm-hmm. Pretty fun sequence.
Yeah.
And then we get the guy.
The club guy, right?
Margaret danced with at the club.
Mm-hmm.
And you think that they hooked up, but she wakes up in her dress.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's kind of revealed later in a flashback that maybe he was the one that impregnated her.
I think he just lured her, and they maybe...
Because
she was
wearing,
drugged enough.
In the ritual, like a...
I mean, maybe he did.
A cloak. And, like, I'm glad the movie didn't, like, actually show us a sexual assault.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I was really grateful for that. Like,
yeah, we get what's happening. We don't need to see it.
Yeah, we know.
So I was trying to figure that out when we were watching it a little bit, but
yeah, it was either him or he brought her back that wasted to the church and the church did something.
Yeah.
The like actual jackal, or I don't know if it's a metaphorical jackal.
Yeah. They do kind of like the imagery that's like, that does go back to Rosemary's Baby a little bit of like these sort of demonic hands on her body, like, like this type of thing.
She even asks the father, played by Bill Nye.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, Bill Nye's in this.
Yeah. She asks him,
some
like,
really
at one point.
Good actors in this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone
was great.
Is great.
Yeah.
The cast is excellent. But she asks him, like, is this real? Like, that moment
absolutely.
In Rosemary's Baby. This is actually happening. Yeah.
So this club guy gets suddenly hit down a side street in Rome by some sort of, like, mid-sized, like, Italian pickup truck that was going 90 miles an hour.
We all know after watching all of these Final Destination movies,
exactly.
You should not be walking
exactly.
backwards as you're stepping off of a curb into a street.
Yeah. That was one moment in this movie where I was like,
I wanted something a little bit more outrageous than that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was
like
a good sudden, but I was kind of expecting it because I don't know. There's the tension in that scene of her seeing him and he's kind of running away from her,
she's
scared.
Yeah,
she
following
doesn't
him
understand.
Down the street.
She runs him into the street, basically. I wanted something a little bit more like in the first one, we get that plate glass.
Well, this
like
is absolutely an homage
guy, right?
to that. It's just
one of the most perfectly executed visual effects.
Oh, it's
so
good.
Yes. Like, you know, they were just like,
when it was spinning, when
like
a head
the top
spins,
half of that head spins in the air.
Yep.
So good.
It's so good.
It's so good.
It's amazing.
So yeah,
it's so iconic.
I wanted something like that, and it was just kind of this sudden, almost jump scare kind of kill where
very
just like whoa
out of nowhere.
All right,
yeah,
but
just
they do
slammed and then
but like, for
they
how
do
good
finish
they,
it out pretty strong.
They do. I just want to say, like, for how good the cinematography is throughout this movie, that setup for him getting creamed by a car is so rote and, like, obvious. I was like, oh,
yeah.
God, we all knew it was coming.
Yeah. This movie is, it's better than that. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. And I was a little bit disappointed in that moment. Like, kind of in the same way I was a little bit disappointed in, we all kind of were, that we were talking about, like, some of the jump scare cues was, like, the music. It's like, this movie is trying, for the most part, to do something else, something a little bit more outside of that. Mm-hmm. So when those moments come, when it's like, it's exactly what you expect, like, it's, I don't know, it's disappointing.
Only sometimes, though.
So like, it's very rare. Like, I don't want to overcharacterize the movie as, like, falling into that trap over and over again, because it does not do that.
Yeah. It's a couple of moments.
But yeah, the end of that. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. The end of the guy getting hit by the car is, I mean, it's he's pinned against the wall, right at his waist, just like in Signs.
You leaned over to me and you were like,
swing away, Meryl. And yeah, she's distraught and she runs over to him and, like, thinks she's helping him by hoisting his body.
Her thought process there was a little weird.
Yeah, I was like, she clearly just didn't know that he was severed in half.
Cut in half, yeah.
And then she pulls his top half of the body out, and there's a crowd of people. They all just are, like, gasping. It's good. Like, okay.
All these Italians. What do Italians say?
Ciao! Va bene! Yes. Ciao! Mamma mia!
Oh my god.
No, it was fun actually watching this, and, like, I also just had a great time seeing all of these shots of Rome and and, like, picking up again, like, little Italian phrases of, like, just things they would say. There's when she first arrived, when Marguerite che cosa? When Marguerite first arrives, one of the older lady nuns says, what does she say? She says, oh, nuestra Americana bella, or something like our American beauty. That's right.
I was also able to pick up on some of those too. Like, mm-hmm. you know, there was a couple times where they're like, close the door, and it's like,
yeah,
you get that.
Yeah,
but
it's really cool.
In Italian, like, and it's not subtitled, so mm-hmm. it's kind of fun to,
I was,
like,
really
to
glad
up.
That there were no subtitles.
Me too.
In this movie.
Yeah. It was easy to follow because, like you said, they would say the thing. They'd say a direction
Actually,
or a question, and it would
be
asked
where we get them, but,
like, pretty directly, or they do what they, like, yeah, go close the door, like, something la porta. I can't remember what close the door is, but it's like, oh yeah, okay, mm-hmm. it's fun. Yeah.
Yeah, it is fun.
So, deaths.
Yeah, what's the next one after that?
Is it after the car one?
Is it?
I think it might be Bill Nye.
The next car one at the end?
Oh, wait, there's a pretty big car crash.
Right before the final sequence of the film.
Yeah,
right before the climax.
We don't know that anyone's dead in that, though.
One of them, I think we...
The driver's absolutely
could assume,
dead.
Because it looked like his head was just smooshed against
the steering
wheel.
Like, his hair was matted.
We don't I think the two in the front seat are potentially dead. Brennan obviously lives. Margaret obviously lives. Mm-hmm. So, two in question in a very throwaway, let's just get rid of some of this cast, car crash. And
I mean,
then,
look, I don't think any of them are coming back for the sequel. So
the second omen.
The second omen. God, what would that be about?
I did like, though, outside of this car crash, this is basically when the final ritual is about to happen and Margaret's captured from this vehicle after they plow into it. And she gives an amazing, like, physical performance as her, like, pregnancy, like, suddenly sets in.
Yeah, because we discover that she is, like we said, the other vessel. She has been impregnated, most likely, and she's on the way with Father Brennan and the other guy to a doctor that I think is going to abort it.
Yeah, because midnight
and on this movie is pro-abortion.
June 6th,
by the way.
Yes.
Yeah.
As well as our podcast.
Yes.
And, yes.
Yeah, so then she gets out of this car crash, and I think the baby, the fetus or whatever, probably knows what's happening, that it's maybe or something. There's it feels like it's suddenly is sped up because she suddenly is like really pregnant.
And I feel like it's like, just that's the gestation period because they knew that she was going to have it within 6 hours.
That's right. Oh, that's right. That's right.
She had to have it on June 6th at 6 a.m.
So,
and June 6th at midnight is when they start to go.
So we have to talk about this.
That's right.
I really need to break this down because, like, the whole movie is built around this mystery of who's about to birth Damien. Like, I think if you know anything about the Omen series. When you see a prequel is about to happen and pregnancy is part of it, you're like, one of these people is going to give birth to Damien.
One of the 30 women in this movie. It's all
nothing but birthing people right up and down. I think the conceit in terms of how they wrote the script, the conceit of like the pregnancy setting in suddenly was a way to keep the mystery hidden about who was ultimately going to be David.
100%.
For sure. Absolutely.
100%.
So, like, when I saw that, I was like, that brought me back a little bit. Brought me out of it just a little bit.
For sure. Because I figured out the night she wakes up after that, the night out at the club, and she wakes up in her dress in her bed, I was like, oh, she has, like, a conversation with her roommate, and I'm like, oh, she hooked up with that guy, so she's pregnant. At the very least, she's pregnant by somebody. If not him, like, she got impregnated that night. And that, like, I didn't necessarily need that, like, sort of, like you said, the sort of weird rules of this thing. Like,
the just, demonic. Yeah,
it's exactly. Just sort of like, oh, there was that seed plant. seed planted in my mind and in her earlier. And, like, yeah, we could, I think the audience would have been able to follow that. That, like, oh, yeah, she's now giving birth.
Yeah.
And you don't need to say like, oh, it needs to be this many. I was just like, oh, it's the Antichrist. Probably could come out whenever the fuck it wants.
Also in that moment where she wakes up after her night at the disco club and has this dalliance. Well, she is worried that she had some dalliance with a young man who's very hot, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Wood. I'll carry the demon seed.
You said multiple times during that movie, he saw it.
Really hot.
I would, but like it. Not as into it as you apparently. Yes. You were into it.
Yeah, even when he's cut in half, I'm like, it's still good. It's still good.
I don't need a bottom half.
No, I mean, I'd leave it. Not for this podcast. But there's the image when she wakes up the night after this club outing and like you get the like spider on her eyelashes and like that's like a very like kind of tropish bit of imagery. It's like you were the person caught in this web.
Yes.
Actually. Uh-huh. After all, I mean, which is kind of obvious because it's from her perspective, but I was like, yeah, I get it.
Well, there were a lot of scenes also where the imagery of her, there were scenes of her laying in bed and the vantage point was from the ceiling looking down on her, and her hair was situated in a way that it was spider legs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's a lot of spider imagery in this,
whether it's overt or baby spiders as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Baby spiders, spiders crawling, her hair representing spider legs. It's,
I'm just glad that we didn't see the image you guys both know I hate.
Apple.
Apples.
No apples eaten to indicate, oh, there's the loss of innocence. There's the sin. Yeah, sin's exactly. Gonna start happening now.
They did full blast. It. They dropped a bushel of apples when the nun fell off.
That's kind of true.
That's okay.
That was not done as a metaphor.
Right. I don't want the lead character like holding the apple and looking at it like contemplatively and then taking a bite of it and just sort of like,
this is a little bit of a sidebar, but when I saw Oppenheimer and like there's a scene in like the first 30 minutes of the movie where Oppenheimer like literally injects poison into an apple and gives it to someone, and I was like, fuck that off. Fuck off this fucking freshman year like film studies fucking writing metaphor. Suck my dick. Get out of here.
Yeah.
Anyway, that movie was fine.
Sam loves a good apple seed. Put apples in all the movies he watches.
Oh, I hate it so much. So the first Omen is what we're talking about, actually, not Oppenheimer. Not Oppenheimer. Unless we want to loop back to Barbie. Do we want to turn this into a Barbie episode?
Yes. Yes. No. Yes, yes. 1,000 times yes.
No, I think overall, this film is incredibly promising in and it does have an epilogue that kind of sets up a potential sequel. I mean, it's kind of a narrow runway in terms of how you can make follow-ups to this movie, because you ultimately have to arrive at the original film.
Yeah, I mean,
which is where this ended. It ended exactly at the beginning of the first.
Yeah, right.
Original. Oh, is it?
Pretty much. I mean, like, they're seeking out Gregory Peck. They have a photo of Gregory Peck.
Well, yes, but I also mean, like, the cabin in the woods, in the wilderness sequence.
Oh, that's not in the original.
Oh, no, it's not.
No.
So I think that was a setup for...
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Trying
yeah.
to, like, latch onto a potential, like, kind of side story.
Yeah, totally.
Before or concurrently right. with the
Damien thing is going to happen, but then there is this these three characters that have survived, these three women, girls, young baby, you know.
Young baby.
Young baby.
Is that a SoundCloud rapper?
Should be.
Well, I mean, wasn't it the fourth Omen that followed a female?
Yes.
Antichrist?
I only know that because I looked it up on Letterboxd and I was like, I apparently saw this movie, but I have no fucking memory of it.
I mean, they might branch and go that direction.
Because they're, like we kind of mentioned, like, this ends with Damien being born with a twin sister.
Mm-hmm.
And there's apparently some connective tissue that they wanted to establish with that. And
the timeline here doesn't make sense, though. No, I guess it does. Yeah, yeah. Because Father Brennan shows up, so it's obviously before he dies in the original Omen. Mm-hmm. He shows up at the end to warn her that they know, the church knows where she is, and they might come for her.
And there's a very funny moment where Margaret, when Father Brennan shows up, she points a double barrel shotgun at its back.
Uh-huh. Was it double barreled? Was it just a rifle?
No, it wasn't.
No, it was
a shotgun. Barrels.
Yeah.
Okay. And then she, like, racks it like a rifle. Like, you get the sound effect of her, like, racking
it. Maybe that's why I thought it was a rifle.
Chambering around. It's so funny.
Like, yeah, one of those, like, a single barreled shotgun that you would cock, that you would, like,
pump action.
Pump action.
Oh, yeah. There's pump action, and then, like, a double barrel, like, you can cock back to
the levers.
We have to stop saying pump and cock. We have to stop.
I mean, in this movie, all we've been talking about. Birds, dicks, pussies.
It's our horniest episode. Let's I haven't even gotten to what I want to say about the roommate in this. I'll save it for the end.
She was... I am 100%... Well, I mean, I'm gay. She was hot.
She is very, very hot. Oh. Anyway.
Yeah. So, we're going from guns right back to talking about how hot the roommate was.
Titties, legs...
And she's the ultimate betrayal. Whatever, you'll take all of it.
Guys, gun is God's.
You were ordering
moves,
like fried chicken for a second. Breasts, legs, wings, whatever. The whole thing.
The whole thing.
I am going to talk about wigs at a certain point.
Oh, wigs.
That'll be my final thought. Or should I just do it now?
Yeah, do it now.
The wig art in this movie is terrible. It's the two lead. Characters, the sisters, Margaret and what's her name again?
Carlita.
They have the worst wigs that I think I've ever seen. And I typically can clock a good wig. Even a good wig, I can typically clock it. These were so bad, egregiously bad. Margaret had one that was very similar to the wig in Malignant, if any of you have seen that and seen how bad that wig was.
Oh, I've seen it.
And then there was even a scene where they're in a museum, I believe, and Carlita has a close up on her face and she's talking. You can see the lace of the wig. And I don't know that you would be able to on at home TV, definitely not on, like, if you're watching on a laptop at a future date. But on the big screen in high def, you can see the lace of her wig, and it just makes me question the wig artistry in Italy. I would assume
the wig artistry.
It is an art. It really it.
So you found the wigs to be immoral and an offense to God.
Yes.
Well, do we have any final thoughts on this movie? Okay, wait.
That was my final thought.
Okay, that was your final thought. Ralph, rank the Omen series bottom to top now. Go.
the fourth one. The second one. The third one. And the first one. Where would I put this one? The first Omen, excuse me. The original is what I meant.
Actually, I would agree with exactly what you said right now.
I think I'd probably put this one pretty close to the first one. The original, excuse me. The first Omen.
It's so hard.
The Omen.
Yeah, I would put this right below. I really put you on the spot. I didn't actually expect you to do that. But I would probably... I agree 100% with...
Yeah. Four, how you ranked. 2, 3, first... Omen.
I would also agree with that.
Yeah, I would probably put this one right around 3. I'd have to do a little rewatching, and I'd put the remake right below 3 and the first Omen.
Oh yeah, I forgot about the remake.
I need to rewatch it. All I'm going off of is my Letterboxd. I know that this movie for me is just behind the original Omen.
I think you liked it most of all of the three of us.
I shared with y'all on the way to the theater. I grew up with this movie. This was one of my parents were strict about what I was allowed to watch and not watch until it came to Christian themed horror. I probably saw The Exorcist and The Omen way sooner than I should have been allowed to, and probably one of the reasons why they still scare me to this day. I still get scared watching The Exorcist.
It's a scary ass movie.
It's a fucking scary movie
made by an obsessive freak.
We go
back and listen to our episode on the Pope's Exorcist if you want to hear us talk about William Friedkin for a while. And also Father Gabriel Amorth. Cannot wait for the Pope's Exorcist 2. Oh,
if that ever does happen, it's been stalled.
Oh, it's happened.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Oh, wait, it was stalled? I saw recently
in the last couple weeks that there was some stalling happening, but it seems like there's a demand for it, so I think it will happen.
I mean, that movie made a surprising amount of money.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'd watch a second one of that.
Oh, I would. I had a great time watching it. All right, so we're going to close out the episode. Just kind of reminding everyone, we are all Catholic now. We're
that bathroom break was actually a baptism break, and I baptized both
Scott and
Sam.
I put my head into the toilet.
I went online, and I got my certificate to baptize for the Catholic Church. And
you Googled,
I
from the Vatican,
your head
Googled
in the
ordained
toilet.
As minister of fast.
Give you a swirly.
Blessed the toilet water. But next week, we will all bend towards the boundless light of Islam. We will say the Shahada on the podcast.
We'll convert to all of the religions from the weeks to come.
Yeah, our tour through religions. But thank you everybody for listening. We are really looking forward to announcing more information about our Sith coverage coming up, like we mentioned at the top of the episode.
Do we want to do our double feature?
Before we go, before we do the outro here, we're going to do double features. Our favorite closing feature of the show.
Yeah.
Who wants to go first? Not me. I'm scared.
I'll go first.
Go first.
Because mine actually, I actually had two final thoughts, but I thought I would lump my last final thought with my movie.
Exactly.
Okay.
I'm going to pair this with Suspiria.
Cool.
The music, this movie is such an homage and like was inspired so heavily by Suspiria. from the visual, like, cues, walls being painted, secret doors walking through muraled walls, the score was similar to the Goblin soundtrack for Suspiria. It just screamed Suspiria to me, and it's one of my favorite movies, if not my favorite movie. So yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, it has to be Suspiria.
I like that comparison.
This movie, the first Omen, I think you could pair with, and there are so many very obvious inspirations and sort of references that it's making, and Suspiria is like a big one of, like you said, like those visuals. Like there was a moment like where there's a key put in a little hole in the wall, and the wall's painted.
The lily?
Yeah, the blue and yellow lilies or something.
Yeah.
From Suspiria, and the Marguerite is putting a key in this wall, and even the shot, the way it's framed, I'm like, oh, this
and
looks
a
like
painted
Susie
wall, like a
finding
mural.
Those lilies and getting into that secret wall, into this secret sort of lower society, not lower, but like deep state society of this culture that is doing some really nasty like black magic kind of shit.
It's just the entire time I was, and I, you know, I was like I said, I'm just eating it up. I'm like,
I
love it.
Yeah.
All right, Ralph,
I'm gonna throw a wild one out here and say, maybe not that wild, but it's not that wild at all because it's a nun movie as well. I recently watched Black Narcissus, and it's gorgeous.
Yeah,
and
I don't know that I've seen this one.
It's a weird eerie movie about a couple of different nuns at this they're offered this space to create like a school or a sanctuary or I can't remember exactly what it is, but they're trying to create like a community and take care of the church there and make something out of it. And there's like a couple of different nuns that we kind of follow, and some are sort of behaving maybe not as good as they should be, and one's maybe a little bit more of a staunch, you know, Catholic. And I specifically, like, there's a wonderful, a lot of overlaps, I think, of this and the first Omen, but just there's a part where, you know, we see all these characters in their habits for like 45 minutes to an hour of the movie, and then suddenly one of these characters, we come into her quarters, and she's wearing this like sort of just plain clothes, not plain clothes, it's not plain at all, it's a gorgeous dress. It's a gorgeous dress, and it's like shocking to like see it when she appears, and because we're almost entering the room as this other character who's very maybe more prudish, and it's sort of like like it's like this moment that you kind of almost gasp, like because she's so gorgeous, but also it's like, oh, that's against the rules. And when we meet Marguerite's roommate, she comes home in this like leather trench coat, and she like pulls it off, and she's got this just, oh god, wonderful like dress with these like fishnet stockings. It's just like, oh, this is so sexy. I understand the appeal of like the sexy nun of like, yeah, oh, you peel up the habits and the robes, like, and there's,
we start
like
getting into sexy nun movies. There's a lot of territory to cover there.
I
Black
almost
Narcissus
suggested
some of the best
the Paul
Matt
Verhoeven
paintings.
One.
Oh yeah.
Benedetta. Watch that one as well. That one's way more horny.
No, you only get one.
I'm sorry. Just watch that on
Black Narcissus. I am gonna go with The Pope's Exorcist.
Nice.
Awesome.
Keep it simple.
One, because we just talked about it, and two, because I kind of loved that movie. It's so fucking corny, and it's really, really hilarious to hear Russell Crowe's like absurd Italian accent. So
yeah,
watch that movie, go back, listen to our episode on that, and do it in whatever order you like.
Yeah.
All right. So thank you, everybody, for listening to The Screaming Room, the only podcast about horror movies. We are really excited to announce what our SIFF coverage is going to look like in the coming weeks.
Yeah.
If we go to the red carpet thing, you're going to see us on social media. We will post
photos. Our pictures.
Two of you.
Ralph
two,
and I will.
Two
Scott,
of you.
Scott is going to be gone. Scott will rejoin us in the second half of SIF at the beginning of May, in the middle of May.
Yeah.
I hope you have a good time in LA though, Scott.
Yeah. Oh, it'll be fun. Yeah. If anybody listening is at Cruel World Festival, that is what I'm going down for.
Cruel World.
It is a music festival.
That sounds mean.
Blondie is headlining. I think Interpol, Placebo is going to be there.
Weird.
It's going to be a really fun fucking time. So if anybody is there, reach out and let me know and we'll meet up.
Well, you can reach out to us on social media. You can find us on Twitter at TheRoomCast. We're on Instagram at Screaming Room Pod. And if you just search The Screaming Room on either one of those, you'll find us. But if you want to send us an email because you're over the age of 40, no.
Damn.
You're over social media.
No, I'm going back to email. I'm done with social media.
I'm getting there.
I'm turning 40. Give it a few years. Yeah. I'll get there. You can email us at screamingroompod@gmail.com. And please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It really does help us get discovered by other people. And we really appreciate everyone that has left us a review on there so far. And a big thank you to everyone that is a supporter, donor to the show. If you want to be as cool as those people, click support the show in the show notes for this episode. And if you give us money, you can tell us what to cover, and we will take it under very serious consideration.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so thank you again, everybody, and hail Satan.
Hail Santa.
Hail Satan. Goodbye.
Goodbye.